And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. And folks, do we have a show for you tonight. Let me tell you what you can expect to hear. I'm going to get into everything we're going to be discussing. Now, we're obviously going to be talking about the Jonathan Gannon situation out in Phoenix, the play with, I believe it's called Imari DiMercado. That running back who is an undrafted rookie at 26 years old. What happened there against their team, game against the Titans. We'll also be talking about the Major League Baseball playoffs, which are hot and heavy right now. There are some series that are about to be decided, some that have yet to be decided. So I'll give you my thoughts on some of those as well. And of course, we'll get into a review of the NFL week that was week 5 in the National Football League. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Folks, I got to tell you, I understand that what Imari DiMercado did can't happen. I get that his dropping the ball before he crossed the goal line in that game against the Titans could have salted the game away for the Cardinals. Absolutely. But I got to tell you, I saw this play and have a completely different reaction than most people who saw it had. Look, what DiMercado did, you know, you can't do it. But he wasn't showboating when he dropped the ball before crossing the goal line. It's not like he was high-stepping or jawing at the defensive player or yucking it up with the crowd and then dropped the ball. He was actually, after a 72-yard run, trying, in my opinion, to do things the right way by dropping the ball humbly and getting on with the next play. Fact is, he just did it too early. It was a mistake. It was a mistake by a young player who did not do it intentionally. And there was no ill will. There was no malice. There was nothing selfish about it. I've heard this described by so many commentators. And former pro athletes as being selfish, as being a boneheaded play, as being stupid, as being all about me. I don't agree with any of that. I think the kid, who I believe is 26 years old, I think he just made an honest mistake. He's a young player trying to do things the right way, thought he had scored before crossing the goal line and dropped the ball instead of spiking it. He didn't go into some celebration dance or anything like that. He just thought he was already across the goal line when he was beginning to drop the ball. So it's a mistake. Now, more importantly to me, the Cardinals were up 21-6 at that time in the game with almost 13 minutes left against a winless Tennessee Titans team. Are you telling me that the Cardinals had no shot of winning the game after a fumble that happens? DiMercado's dropping the ball before crossing the goal line? Is that what you're telling me? There was 13 minutes left in the game. The Cardinals literally had numerous opportunities to win that game after the mistake by DiMercado. Look, once again, this kid, he made a play that was sorely needed at the time in the game, all right? But let's be honest. He has some ability. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to give you a 72-yard run. But he made a mistake, a young football player's mistake. And you know he was sick to his stomach about it. He felt horrible, I'm sure, on the sidelines. I mean, you saw some Cardinals consoling him. And what was taking place after the play is what should have taken place. You had some Cardinals walking over to him, telling him, keep your head up. We're going to need you. Don't worry about it. This, we got you. We'll back you up. For me, this is a time, especially with a young player, that you try to pick him up. You don't try to run him down. It's a mistake. It is a mistake. but it can happen to anyone. It wasn't out of malice, selfishness, or showboating, in my opinion. Now, what happens with the Cardinals? Instead of going out, when you have almost the entire fourth quarter left to play in the game, and again, you have a 21-6 lead at the point where DeMarcado makes this mistake that can't and shouldn't happen, but did. What do? They go out and find multiple ways to lose the game through ineptness and offensive and defensive ineffectiveness. Now, why did that happen? Because they're the Arizona Cardinals, and the Arizona Cardinals are a bad team. Folks, DeMarcado, he dropped the ball before crossing the goal line 2 minutes into the fourth quarter. Are you telling me that the Arizona Cardinals lost the game on that play? I completely disagree. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals are a bad football team, and bad football teams look for any excuse to justify losing games. And that, in my opinion, is what happened here. Don't talk to me about momentum, which is real. Momentum is real. But what DeMarcado did, I don't believe that's the reason you lose the football game. The Arizona Cardinals, if that's the reason you lose the football game, you're telling me that the Arizona Cardinals cannot win a football game unless they have a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter instead of a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter? That's what you're telling me. I mean, it's literally ridiculous to blame that loss on the DeMarcado. I'm having trouble saying his name, but you know what I mean. On the mistake by that running back, DeMarcado. It's ridiculous. I don't understand. I mean, you can't win a game as the Arizona Cardinals if you have a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter. You have to have a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter to win a football game. Doesn't make any sense to me. Which brings me to Coach Jonathan Gannon and his sideline antics. Look, folks, I hear you. As a coach, you are allowed to dress down your players any way you like. You can, you know, bench them. You can yell at them six ways to Sunday. You can tell them to go stand in the corner and keep his head down. You can do any of that. But what you can't do is put your hands on one of your players. You cannot do that. Keep your hands to yourself, Jonathan Gannon. You can't do that if you're a head coach in anger. And that was the issue about Jonathan Gannon's reaction. No one ever has talked about his right to dress down a player verbally. Go crazy. But I don't care if Coach Gannon hit DeMarcado in his chest plate of his shoulder pad. I don't care if it was a glancing blow. I don't care if it wasn't, he didn't slug him in the head or slug him in the stomach, so that makes it okay. Absolutely not. None of it is okay. You don't put your hands on one of your players if you're the head coach. You don't do it. You can't do it. And DeMarcado, in my opinion, showed a tremendous amount of self-restraint when he was feeling pretty bad to begin with already. And now he's got his head coach, who's supposed to be the leader of the team, coming in, trying to be a tough guy, slugging at him. Think about this situation, folks. You are the Arizona Cardinals, and you are down two running backs already. You already lost John Connor. You already have Trey Benson out. And you are going to choose to let this player know, DeMarcado, what a bonehead decision he made verbally, and then push him or strike him to kind of prove your point? You're the Arizona Cardinals. You don't have enough players to do that. What you need to be doing is try to pick this kid up. and tell them, we got you. Don't worry about it. We have a whole fourth quarter to play. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable to me. And yes, look, Jonathan Gannon apologized for his actions, as well he should have. He was fined $100,000, and he should have been fined $100,000. But I got to tell you this. The actions that Jonathan Gannon took showed or revealed to me a real lack of leadership. And you need that if you're going to be a coach. And you need that not only when things are going well. You need it in the heat of the moment when things aren't going well. And that's what Jonathan Gannon showed to me. And maybe that's why the Arizona Cardinals have had such a difficult time winning games since he has been their head coach. He is not the only coach to lose games for the Arizona Cardinals. Absolutely not. And his team has played hard for him to this point in his three-year tenure. But you cannot put your hands on a player if you're the coach, Jonathan King. I mean, outside of being physically threatened, that is the only reason you would ever put your hands on a player if you're the head coach. You're supposed to be setting an example. Now, Jonathan Gannon, I know, is under enormous pressure to win football games. I get that. But I got to tell you this. No amount of pressure that he is under justifies you striking one of your own players. This is not 1942. You can't go around striking players. And I think Jonathan Gannon realized that he messed up by doing that, and that's why he apologized publicly like he did. Now, look, I think it's easy to be a tough guy. I mean, it's easy, especially when you think nobody's watching. But there are cameras all over the place, especially in an NFL game. Again, Coach Gannon is very lucky that DeMarcado showed the restraint that he showed after Gannon struck him. If he'd done that to a different player, it might have been a real, real problem, not only for Gannon himself, but for the Arizona Cardinal franchise and for the NFL. So you can't have that. Now, I'm going to give you a comparison, and I want you folks to tell me what you think. Do you think that a coach like Mike Tomlin, a coach like Dan Campbell, these are real tough guys in my mind, do you think they would ever put their hands on a player, no matter what the mistake those players made? And both of those coaches have experienced players who have made bad plays throughout the course of their coaching careers. Do you think Tomlin or Campbell would ever put their hands on a player? Absolutely not. Because you don't do that as a coach. You can't. You're supposed to be the coach, so coach. Don't get into some kind of physical altercation because you're mad at something that happened in the game. You're supposed to use that moment to teach your players how to do things the right way so that you can get something out of them later when you need them, later being the rest of the season. So I was very down on this whole story and the way it was covered. And I don't think that DeMarcado should be getting anywhere near the grief that he got in the press. And I think Coach Jonathan Gannon did a horrible job as a coach. Anyone is allowed to make a mistake. DeMarcado made a mistake. Jonathan Gannon made a mistake. But when you are the head coach of a football team, you are supposed to make different mistakes, not that kind of mistakes. Should it cost him his job? No, it shouldn't. But I will tell you what will cost him his job. If the Arizona Cardinals keep losing games, and he in turn loses his team. So that's what you have to watch out for if you're Coach Jonathan Gannon. So that's my story on that. Now, let's talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs. Folks, I got to tell you, I have not watched baseball most of this season, and I jumped in during the playoffs, and boy, am I glad I did. I'm telling you, Shohei Ohtani, what a player. Oh my gosh. Game one, Dodgers-Phillies of the National League Division Series. This was the first time, folks, and I know I'm late to the party. I'm always late to the party, but I'll tell you when I get in. This is the first time, folks, that I have ever seen Shohei Ohtani pitch. And it was very, very striking. To me, Ohtani, he's had such a big frame. He's such a big guy. He looked more like a thrower of the baseball than a pitcher to me. But he made some beautiful pitches. It was so much fun to watch. It was so fascinating to see. You know, I don't know what Shohei looked like as a pitcher before Tommy John. And it would be interesting to find out, for those of you who do, how effective his stuff is, in your opinion. Because I just know some of the pitches he made against Schwarber, Harper, Turner, they were beautiful pitches. Even though they kind of looked ugly coming out of his hand, what a pitcher. Some great, great pitches. Ohtani's the best player in baseball. I mean, and it's not even close. Look, he went head-to-head with Schwarber in game one and, you know, basically told the story. Shohei Ohtani won that matchup. I do have to say, one of my favorite players in the history of baseball was one Ichiro Suzuki, probably the first true Japanese superstar to come over to the major leagues. There have been Japanese players before, Hideo Nomo and others. But Ichiro was the first true superstar who not only came over as a superstar, but lived up to the billing when he got to the major leagues from day one. He and Ohtani are different players, granted, but Ichiro Suzuki was a fantastic baseball player. He had speed to burn. He could make contact with a baseball in his sleep. He could track a baseball in the outfield with his eyes closed. This is how complete a player Ichiro Suzuki was. And as you may or may not know, we did this several episodes ago, but I was in Japan last year, and I spoke with several people in Japan who were baseball fans, both in Tokyo and Kyoto. And I asked them all one simple question, and I did it through translations: Ichiro or Ohtani? And every single person in Japan who I asked, they all said Ichiro. Why? Because they said Ohtani has to do it for longer. Ohtani's a great player, but Ichiro did it his whole career. They need to see more out of Ohtani, which is fair. I agree with that argument. But I have to say, the more I watch Ohtani, the more I believe I am wrong in my assessment. I think you have to take Ohtani over Ichiro. And Ichiro was a fantastic Hall of Fame baseball player. But that is how good I think Ohtani is. You know, it's kind of amazing. It's weird. I don't even think about Shohei Ohtani as an Angel anymore. You know, he was there with the Angels for six seasons. And I don't even remember watching Ohtani. As a Dodger, I've seen him a lot, and he has been a revelation. And I got to tell you, folks, one of the greatest mysteries in the history of professional sports is, how did Shohei Ohtani, on a team with Mike Trout, never get to the playoffs in six seasons? Can anyone answer me that? Shohei and Mike Trout. I mean, it's unbelievable. They never made the playoff once playing together. That I cannot fathom and cannot understand. So it's weird. I don't know who beats the Dodgers. I don't know if anybody beats the Dodgers. They're such a complete team. They can crush you coming out the gate. They never panic when they're behind. They make every single play that they need to make when they need to make it, and they are battle tested. So they are going to be a very tough out, as everyone has said since last season when they won the World Series. Are they unbeatable? No, but they're going to be very, very, very hard to beat. Which brings me to this. As quiet as it's kept, Dave Roberts has really turned into a terrific manager. I got to tell you, I mean, seems like every move that he has made as a manager, from the catcher swaps to his choices with the rotation, his pitching rotation, to whom to start and whom to pinch hit and when, seems like they've all worked out incredibly well. In games 1 and 2, he really showcased how good of a manager he was in the National League Divisional Series. It's weird. I know people have killed Dave Roberts for years for his decision-making as a manager. They say he's managing an all-star team. He doesn't know what he's doing. This, that, and the other. Anybody can manage the Dodgers. You know, some of those criticisms were warranted in the past. But if you look at his postseason decisions, both this year and last year, tell me what manager has done a better job with their team. Who? Yes, the Dodgers are loaded. Agreed, no argument there. But so are the Yankees. So are the Phillies. If you look at the Tigers and the Cubs, they're not that far behind either. You're telling me right now that you wouldn't take Dave Roberts as manager of the Yankees, as manager of the Phillies, over Aaron Boone or Rob Thompson? You don't think he'd do a better job with those two teams? Folks, I'm telling you right now, Dave Roberts has turned into a terrific manager. Now, it is possible to get better as a coach or a manager as you go along. I mean, some managers from their first season on are terrific and go on to legendary careers. But some managers, it takes some time to kind of grow into the role. And I think that is exactly what you're seeing with Dave Roberts right now. And he has arrived, as far as I'm concerned, as one of the best managers in the game. You can put him in the top five easy. I dare you to tell me five other managers you take ahead of Dave Roberts, regardless of the lineup or roster. So there is that. Now, folks, let's talk a little bit about the NFL week 5 that was. I got to tell you, we're going to start off with the Eagles. It was a tough loss for the Eagles. And you don't want to lose a game to anyone, even the Denver Broncos, when you have a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. But it is not the end of the world. I have to say, I did take some solace in the fact that the passing game seemed to be a little more focused and more improved. And I think that when you come right down to it, this loss that the Eagles experience will help them as they continue on with the rest of the season. They were never going to go 17-0. But you just don't want to lose games where you have a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. That is not really a blueprint of what you're looking to get out of any game or any season. But give Denver credit. They hung in there. They made plays when they had to. Eagles got a couple of tough calls, a couple of tough non-calls. But that's all part of the game. We move on. Thankfully for the Eagles, they get a chance to get back on the field tomorrow night. We're recording this Wednesday night. And face the Giants. And this will be a good game. Should be a good test for both teams, actually. The Giants need to prove that they were the team that won Jackson Dart's first start against the Chargers and not the team that laid an egg last week against the Saints. And the Eagles need to wash the bad taste out of their mouth that was given to them by the Denver Broncos. So this will be a fun game. It'll be an interesting game. I'm looking forward to seeing that game tomorrow night being Thursday. Look, I understand that we had just come off a Cowboys-Packers tie the previous week, but under no circumstances, if you're Sean McVay, can you go for a fourth and one or a fourth and short with less than a minute to go in regulation on your opponent's 11-yard line when you're only down three? You have to kick the field. You have to take the tie. You have to go into the next period, which is overtime, and take your chances there. To Coach McVay's credit, he said as much. It was a dumb decision by him. He admitted that. And I get that everyone wants to win, but sometimes you don't have to win in regulation. You can get to overtime and win there. And I think he understands that. But you cannot give away chances to win games in the National Football League because it is so hard to do. So, you know, you're not worried about the Rams per se, but that was not a great response or bounce back from the Rams after they won that game against the Colts late last week. What else do we have? The Browns. I watched Browns-Vikings. I was interested in that game. I wanted to see what Dylan Gabriel did. I wanted to see what Carson Wentz did in his second start. And it was kind of an interesting watch. I have to say, Dylan Gabriel played okay. He wasn't great. He certainly wasn't horrible. He completely earned the ability to start the next game. I think that what was interesting to see is that he remained relatively poised. Now, remember, his first NFL start was against a Brian Flores-led Minnesota Vikings team that makes veterans in this league look confused and lost. And I never got that sense from Dylan Gabriel. To his credit, he played pretty well, especially if you consider this is his first start in the NFL. So if you're Cleveland, it was a tough loss, but maybe you have something to build on with Dylan Gabriel. You won't know until you know. But obviously, you're going to have to play Shedeur Sanders as well at some point this season because you have to find out what you have in him, whether you're going to use him as trade bait, whether you want to keep him instead of Dylan Gabriel, or whether you want to draft a quarterback because you don't like either one of the two, Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. But you have to play them both. You have to find out what they have. But if you're Cleveland, you have to be encouraged. I mean, obviously, Cleveland was encouraged enough to trade Joe Flacco to the Bengals. So well done for once. I don't say this very often, but well done for once, Cleveland Browns. You are in the game. Let's see how you do this week. But that was a very encouraging start for Dylan Gabriel, if you are the Cleveland Browns or one of their fans. Look, the Ravens are an absolute mess. Is this team going to miss the playoffs? Is this team going to miss the playoffs? They're 1-4 right now. Unless they put together some crazy win streak, it is very difficult to see them making the playoffs. Now, that being said, I do believe if they get Lamar Jackson back, they can find a way to sneak into the playoffs. But it is going to be like the Bengals were last season. Every single game is basically a must win. And even then, you still might not make it because the Baltimore Ravens, in all likelihood, are not going to run the table from here on out for the rest of the season. So I'll be interested to see how both the Ravens respond and how Lamar Jackson plays when he re-enters the game. I don't know if he's off this week or not, but I think he may have one more week off before he gets back in the starting lineup to help heal that hamstring. And once he gets back, it is going to be, you got to empty the chamber if you're the Ravens. You got to go for everything. because you are in danger of missing the playoffs right now. Not next week, not next month, right now. So let's see what the Ravens do. I actually believe they can pull it off. I think they can make the playoffs. But if they don't, what a disaster. And what a horrible job by all parties involved. Coach Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, the defense, everyone should be called on the carpet for the Baltimore Ravens. Because if they don't make the playoffs, this is a horrible season for them. And they deserve every bit of scorn that they likely will receive. Look, I don't know what you do if you're the Jets. I don't know what you do if you're the Dolphins. I don't know what you do if you're the Raiders. Those teams are all disasters. And if you want my opinion, I think the three of them are going to be fighting it out for the top pick in the draft. Maybe along with the Tennessee Titans. Who knows? But picture this. Can you imagine if the Baltimore Ravens end up winning three games this season and getting the first or second pick in the NFL draft this coming offseason with that roster that they have? Oh my gosh. I can tell you they're not going to take a quarterback, but they'll find somebody. That would be just like the Jets. Basically get down to the last week of the season, Jets win the game to give Baltimore the number one pick in the draft. Anyway, the Lions, they have been absolutely terrific since their opening week loss against Green Bay. And it will be interesting to see what the Packers do against a hobbled Cincinnati Bengals team with a new starter who literally just got off the plane in Joe Flacco. Packers need to win that game. They're playing at home. They need to win it big. They've already lost to Joe Flacco once this year. They don't need to do it twice. This is a big week for the Packers. They're coming off their bye, and they need to show not only the rest of the league, but a lot of the fan base that they are for real and that they can play with the Lions, even though they beat them in the opening week. Packers have been a little uneven since that opening week game, and we need to see more maturity out of Jordan Love. We need to see better play from that Packer defense. We need to see the Packers be better in general. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes down. The Commanders had a big win on the road against the Los Angeles Chargers, who, again, another team that's just up and down, the Chargers. Most people trust them more than I do, but I just can't trust the Chargers. I never know what I'm going to get out of them. I really don't. But the Commanders, big time performance. They played well. They did a very good job. And this is the kind of win that can really help them with their season aspirations. Speaking of seasonal aspirations, it will be interesting to see if the Patriots are for real or if they are fool's gold. That was a big win against Buffalo this past week. And everyone for the Patriots played well. Drake May, Stephon Diggs, defense, special teams. It'll be really, really interesting to see just how good are these New England Patriots in 2025, because they have a chance, obviously because of their schedule, but they have a chance to run to put up a pretty good schedule record, a pretty good record. And it will be fascinating to see if they are truly taking the next step now instead of being on their way to taking the next step. And let's not forget, I don't want to leave out the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They are playing terrific football. They have something special going on in Tampa, and they could be the front runner right now for home field advantage in the NFC, notwithstanding how well Detroit is playing. Detroit has a tough schedule. Tampa Bay does not. And if Tampa Bay can get past the next three or four games, they might be on a glide path to home field advantage throughout the playoffs in this year's postseason. So watch out for that. Keep your eye on that. And that is the show for tonight, folks. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. A little under the weather tonight, so we're going to make this a little briefer than usual. But we want to thank you. We are here for you. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.